Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Running. Okay, there. Thank you very much indeed.
To say rolling, doesn't it have to be a camera?
No, not really. Well, in the old days, you had manual tape machines. Not the word manual. Wow. What's the word? What's not digital is...
Analog.
Analog tape machines. Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
There's a thing you can have, like an illness, where you forget words all the time.
Yes, I know. It's called old age.
No. When you can have all the time, like... So you can, most of the time, you can speak normally and whatever, but your brain doesn't work the same way to remember words or something. Because I thought about this when... So, there's this thing that you can't see pictures in your head. So you just inside your head, if you close your eyes, you know, if I get you to close your eyes and I'm like, think of a green field, there's a big tree with apples on it and there's flowers all in the garden and stuff, then you can see it in your head.
I can see that in my head now, looking
but,
at it.
So there's people in the world who can't see anything when they close their eyes and they can't think of anything, so they really struggle to remember the names of people. So they can remember someone's name, but they can't put it together with a face.
I think in a milder form, what that is just old age.
Because people who are young get that.
I saw...
They do. No, you're born with it. And then people usually discover they have it when they're in sort of 20, 21 or something. Mm.
I saw a woman getting out of a car. I saw a woman getting out of a car in a public car park in Wakefield. And I knew... And I said hello. And she said hello. And I walked on. And I knew her from somewhere. And for ages and ages and ages, I could not work out two or three. I tried to work out all the places that I might have seen this woman. And then on last Friday, I went to London. I got the train from Kirgate Station. And I've not been to Kirgate Station for a month or two months, 3 months. I've always got the train from Westgate Station. It's not going to be madly interesting for people outside Westgate.
This is an absolutely scintillating story. It is. Anyway, I went in there. And I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know. I went in there and it was the woman who serves in the coffee bar in Kirgate Station.
And those are the kind of thrilling endings. But that was so boring.
True. But it is. That was boring. I agree with you. But it is so true that, you can see someone. You know the face. Janet and I, your mother and I, ages and ages ago, were walking down the street in Leeds, and we saw this guy, and we thought, he's in a soap opera. He's quite a well-known actor. He's definitely a soap. We went through all the soaps, and we were trying to think who the guy was and from what soap he was, until Sunday of that week when he came round with a Chinese takeaway.
Another thrilling story.
You know what I mean?
It's the cliffhangers in the way you tell it.
Well, I thought that was quite an amusing story.
That is more funny.
It's more funny, thank you. Well, let's see that we're getting some sound on this. Do the sound check now. Do you want a quality joke here?
Yeah.
I've downloaded this new app. It's brilliant. It tells you what to wear, what to eat, and if you've put on weight. It's called the Daily Mail. No? When I was younger... Yeah, that's
not hilarious.
Well, that's from a lady comedian called Hayley Ellis.
That's why women can't make jokes.
Yeah, they can't really. This is a man comedian called Yi Annie, and his joke is, when I was younger, I felt like a man trapped inside a woman's body. Then I was born. No? Okay, well, we've got...
Neither of those are good. Are those still the ones from the Fringe Festival?
These are sort of, because I know you like a more cerebral joke. I did a search on cerebral intelligent jokes, and these are intelligent jokes apparently.
I like a bit. That's what I like.
You're like a bit. Well, that was a bit about seeing people and not knowing who they are.
Yeah.
Should we start?
I mean, you could call it that.
You could call it that, couldn't you? Should we start?
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting idea, Ruth. Children should be allowed to choose their teachers. As far as the selection goes of new teachers, when you get the interview board...
Oh, right. I thought you meant they got to select them every year.
No, they should be allowed to. This is according to a guy called Sean Fenton. He's the chairman of the Headmaster and Headmistresses Conference, which represents private schools, you know, posh schools, Winchester, Eton, schools like that. And he's launching a campaign for children to sit on interviewing panels and select...
That's not a new thing.
Well, no, it's fairly unusual, though, isn't it? And select new teachers. We all know from our own school days that students can sniff out a bad teacher at 50 paces. We did it when we were at school.
I don't know if it's bad teacher, I think we must say weak.
Well, yes, maybe it's weak. But that is a bad teacher, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
We did it when we were at school, and today's school children have not lost that instinct. They get it right.
When I was at St Mary's, that's my primary school, I was on year three school council, still my biggest achievement. I was elected, obviously, democratically. Mm-hmm. And when they were getting a new, like, year one teacher or something, we all sat with all the different candidates for the year one teacher to select the person. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure at Beckett's, I wasn't on any kind of school council, but I'm pretty sure that when they were maybe when they were getting a new deputy head or something, or a new drama teacher, I'm pretty sure that they did have a group of students who interviewed the teacher and met the teachers.
Oh, right.
Met the candidates, yeah.
So this was, did they have a say in whether they were chosen?
So there'd be, I think there was like three options for who it might be. So they've probably already whittled it down a bit, and these were their favourite three or favourite four or something. And then they would run a lesson for this group of kids or something like that, or they would just meet and chat and get to ask them questions, and then the students would tell the teachers, oh, this is, we liked this one, we didn't like this one, we thought this one was a fun teacher, whatever, and then the teacher would take that into account when making their decision.
Maybe it's not that revolutionary. It sounded revolutionary to me, but
no,
but
I don't think it is.
Not. Okay. Now, last week, Ruth, I had a cutting here about sharks, and you said you had some interesting stuff about sharks.
What was your shark stuff? Did you not?
My shark stuff wasn't that interesting. It was just a shark at my kayak. Basically, a man has described his...
It's about as interesting as your...
Westgate train station story. It just happened to be stuck on a piece of paper. I wasn't going to read it out, actually. No. I wasn't going to do that. Shark at my kayak. A man has described his terror after a 13-foot shark bit a hole in his kayak and then circled him as it began to sink.
That is scary. And he survived?
Yeah, he survived.
How did he...
Oh, well, I'll tell you the story then.
You can't... That's a genuine hook of a story. Shark ate my kayak. Mm,
but I didn't bring it in to discuss with you particularly.
No, but I just want to know, so he got out?
Yes, I cut it out of the paper because I thought it was interesting. Kyle Roberts, 31, a married father of two, was fishing off Moffat Beach, 50 miles north of Brisbane, when he was thrown into the water and surfaced to see a large tiger shark.
Right. Just skip to the end.
Skip to the end. It was the seventh major shark attack in Australian waters in 8 weeks, prompting calls for action, including culling.
You see, this is the problem. We demonise the sharks.
Mm.
And it's really bad, just because they're not cute.
But also they're rather dangerous, aren't they?
Yeah, but more people die from hippos than sharks.
Yes.
More people die from vending machines than sharks.
Do they? Can you say that for sure?
I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure. A lot of people die from vending machines.
They fall over on people.
Yeah. In earthquakes, they fall over, or they just fall over because someone's rattling it.
Someone trying to get the chocolate.
Obesity.
Obesity, yeah.
So, sharks. Sharks in zoos.
Mm.
This is specifically the great white shark. There's been constantly people have been trying to get them into aquariums, because obviously they're a major drive for people to go to aquariums, because that's the amazing, like, massive, huge thing. So I'm going to tell you something about gills now.
Mm-hmm.
So fish and stuff can breathe with their gills when they're static. They just push the water in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But and they use their like mouth thing to do that. But a great white shark has to be moving through water to allow the oxygen to go through its gills, so it has to be constantly swimming. So obviously it makes transportation really difficult because you can't just put in a normal tank. Right. You have to put into one of these special ones. And then in 2004, the Monterey Bay Aquarium transported a great white shark and proved it was possible to keep a shark for at least 6 months. They had to get a shark that was less than a year old, so because they're so big, so this one was quite small. And then after 6 months, they decided to release it because it had killed two of the other tank mates. And then over the next 6 years, the aquarium displayed another 5 baby great white sharks, and they kept just dying, but they kept on presenting them, which is obviously terrible because they know that they can't keep them alive. And when they did release one of the sharks, it had a tracking thing on it, and it just disappeared, and they clearly died from its injuries. Because the great white sharks are used to swimming such big distances, and they've got these really flat faces, so they just go into the sides of the aquarium and they get these really bad sores on their face. It's really cruel for animals. So in 2010, they just stopped displaying great whites, and so that was really good, and they were like, we're not doing this anymore because it's clearly terrible for sharks. And then in 2016... a great white shark had appeared at a Japanese aquarium, and then that one died within 3 days. And so now these Japanese aquariums are going to show great whites again.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yes, I mean, it's sort of... By the way, the fish's mouth, I think, is just called the mouth. You don't have to call it that mouth thing that fish
No,
has.
Because it's more of like a...
Well, whatever it looks like, that is the fish's mouth. I don't think you say it's not like the mouth thing.
Baby fish mouth.
Baby fish mouth. It's not the mouth thing. That story is sort of like the story of zoos. It's a sort of exaggerated version of what zoos are all about.
Yeah, zoos, bad.
Yeah.
But then what happens with, like, animal, you know, like animal sanctuaries or...
Well,
you know
the
what I
thing
mean?
Is, if you transplant animals or sea life from their natural environment, there's got to be an element of cruelty to it.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
Did you see the pictures of when it was in Scotland, I think, in a zoo, and they had the polar bears, and then it snowed, and all the polar bears were, like, really, really happy with the snow, and everyone was like, look how cute the polar bears are in the snow. And someone just, like, tweeted or commented on it and was like, oh, it's as if that's how they're meant to live.
Yeah.
It's
well,
like, yeah.
But, the big but is that some of these people who've done sort of great work, like the woman with the gorillas and David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah, what's her name?
Like
Good Diane, Simpsons
Diane
episode.
Diane Fossey, I think it was. So the woman with the gorillas and David Attenborough and all sorts of people like that who've done fantastic work in conservation probably got their first glimpse of some of these animals that they've worked hard to preserve in zoos.
Yeah.
So you've got a balance, I think, between...
And some animals, like so the white rhino... There's only 3 left in the whole of the world. There's only 3 of them left. There might be 3 now, but there was 2 for a time, and then they had to use IVF to because the male one died. And those are only alive because they're in captivity.
Yeah, precisely.
So then, yeah, what?
So zoos do fantastic work in conservation. I think at the end of the day, there's good zoos and bad zoos. And obviously, the great white shark, the case that you're talking about, they shouldn't be in the zoos under any circumstances because
no.
they can't survive properly in aquariums.
But neither can like the whale shark.
The sides of them. What's the whale shark?
It's like a shark, but like a whale.
I've never heard of a whale shark.
Big.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that a real thing? No, I've just made it up here. I'll get you a picture of a whale shark. I just make up animals. See, look, it's like a shark and a whale.
I'm just wondering what your aim is in life. Is it happiness?
Wow. You can't just come out with that. I'm not prepared.
Well, let me tell you the...
Oh, you've got options.
Oh, you've got options here. Do you want to be happy in 2019 or satisfied? A Nobel Prize winning economist has suggested that you may have to choose between the two. Daniel Kahneman, Professor Emeritus at Princeton University, was a leading researcher on the economics of happiness, but stopped when he began to suspect that humans did not strive to be happy at all. Instead, they wanted something very different, which is often completely the opposite, satisfaction. Professor Kahneman devoted much of his career to a tradition begun by Aristotle, who argued that happiness is the ultimate purpose in life. However, this geezer said recently that Aristotle was wrong. Humans actually want to maximise their satisfaction with themselves and with their lives.
That's really interesting.
Yes. I think this is probably aimed more at adults than you, to be honest. Because there's the old thing that Gore Vidal said, that said something on the lines of, when any of my friends fail, it brings great satisfaction.
Every time one of my friends has success, a little piece of me dies.
That's the one. Yeah. Well remembered.
No, I think about that all the time. Because I think it's entirely true.
Yeah. It's selfish, and of
course, you can't help how you feel. As long as you don't express it, it's fine.
Keep quiet about it. But, you're quite right. That would buy into what he's saying, because you're more satisfied, because the whole time you're comparing yourself against, your peer group, whatever it is. And while you're comparing yourself against them, if they're all having fantastic success, even though you might say, oh, I'm so pleased for so-and-so, they're doing so well. At the same time, if they're not doing so well, you think, oh, I'm quite pleased with myself.
I'm doing better than
everybody else. I'll tell you another thing that he said in this sort of satisfaction versus happiness debate. He said, for instance, we often buy holidays in anticipation of gaining memories as much for the enjoyment at the time. This might, do you know what I mean? This may explain why walking holidays, which often involve challenging periods of discomfort, are as popular as beach holidays. Yeah. So, in other words, you're looking for something that creates, I mean, these days it's obviously exaggerated with Instagram and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I read a thing about some really posh, elaborate food that somebody had and said, this is food for sharing, not with a spoon, but with filters, which, you know, sums up exactly what he's saying. So you need to be satisfied with what you're doing, really, rather than the actual emotion of happiness.
With the whole kind of accumulation of memories, even if something is not good at the time, you can think, wow, it's going to be a great memory. And that's one of the things that gets... So I think an example of it is like nights out that are gross and not fun and they're not a great time, but they're all in the quest to accumulate memories.
Yeah.
And so you can think back, and even if you're not having a good time, oh, well, I've got a really great story to tell. This will make a really good tweet. I might have mentioned this before because it's one of my favourite quotes. A woman who, she's kind of like a comedian and on the internet and stuff. She said, so like the comedy is tragedy plus time thing. Which is a really famous thing. And she said, as I get older, I just keep decreasing the time. Something sad happens to me and 2 minutes later, it's a tweet. Nowadays, because of social media and stuff, anything that is not happy can be turned into something positive if you think of a funny spin on it.
Yeah.
And that's like why, so I think that's why comedy that draws on personal experience that's sad is so popular.
It's like the other night, we'll explain, your elder sister, it's her birthday, we went out for a birthday meal. So when we had this birthday meal, my wife's sea bass was cold, # first world problem. But it was cold, so we sent it back, and it came back, and all they'd done was microwave it, and eventually we sent it back again. In our sort of family WhatsApp group, lots of banter about the very miserable sea bass that we had in this restaurant. # first world problems again. But we got lots out of that.
Do you want to hear about R. Kelly?
I'd love to hear about R. Kelly.
Have you heard this in the news?
No, I haven't.
I'm so surprised.
The only thing I know
this
about R. Kelly is he did a thing called I Wish I Could Fly, was it?
I Believe I Can Fly, and the Ignition remix.
The Ignition remix I'm not familiar with, but I believe...
Oh, that's what I thought was the most famous, but anyway. But you've not heard about this in mainstream media?
No.
That's absolutely crazy. So R. Kelly's a really famous R&B singer.
Mm.
He's scored 6 US number one albums, with 7 more reaching the top 5. His hits include Bump and Grind, I Believe I Can Fly, and the Ignition remix.
Right.
So he's really, really, really famous, and I can't believe you've not heard about this. So he's been accused... There's been a lot of docuseries... As they've been coined.
Docuseries, not heard of that.
Documentary accusations. Docuseries.
Right, so this is like a drama doc or a...
Yeah, they're basically, they're documentaries about his... One of them was called R. Kelly, Sex and Guilt, or something like that.
Sex and Guilt. But these would be on some Netflix type thing.
I think they're American more.
Oh, like on the E Channel or one of those.
Maybe, yeah. But they're proper documentaries.
Yeah.
And but I can't believe you've not heard about this and it's not been in the mainstream media, which I think a lot of people have
And they're called docuseries.
Yeah, I mean, that's not important to the story. No.
Well, it is. In that it's only important to the story in that the word doco or documentary is now being used, you know, all right, docuseries. But you get things like the film Best in Show, which is a really good film about dog shows, was described as a spoof documentary. Because, you know, you do that with people doing docs all the time.
And I think a lot of people have sort of called it out of this story not being in the mainstream media, because the victims were black women and not white women, and there's like an inherent racism in media and stuff. So R. Kelly has been accused of grooming a 14-year-old girl as his sex pet. During 2 years of dating Kelly, a woman called Kitty Jones says she was groomed by him and forced to have sex with him and others at least 10 times in a sex dungeon.
Oh, my goodness.
It's, like, awful. And in 2008, Kelly was found not guilty of child pornography charges after he was accused of filming and photographing the sexual encounters with this 14-year-old girl. But there's also been other instances, other girls who have stepped forward and stuff. Despite this, his sales have surged. He's made more money since. And it's really terrifying that it's not...
got into the mainstream media.
Yeah, it's not made any change. And a lot of women are saying... So when it was like... Was it Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby,
when all that came out, it was white women. And so people paid more attention. Because all the victims in this R. Kelly case are black women.
Is R. Kelly?
He's an R&B singer. He's really, really famous.
Is it? Well, I know because I remember the record and I've heard the name, obviously. But is he sort of like a rapper or a hip hop artist? Would you say
an R&B singer?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's a different set of values for.
I think that's
R&B,
the idea. And so,
R&B singers and rappers, you know, you all think, you know, you just listen to the lyrics of the songs.
Mm-hmm. But I think there's a difference between it being in art with, like, consenting adults than it is with 14-year-old girls. Mm. And so Drake, he's not really said that what R. Kelly's done is, like, abhorrent or anything. And then because of the R. Kelly stuff, this disturbing video of Drake kissing and, like, stroking this 17-year-old girl on stage at a 2010 concert has, like, resurfaced after the R. Kelly docuseries has sparked debate about inappropriate conduct by entertainers and how the power can be used. And so, yeah, and there's Drake kissing and he says stuff like, I like the way your breast feels against my chest. And it's, like, absolutely disgusting is the video, considering she's a 17-year-old girl. And he, at the time, I think he was only 23, but, like, it's because of the power balance. He's got a song as well called Teenage Fever, which is basically, like, glorifying how much he likes teenage girls. And so a lot of people have been saying, like, we should be speaking out against these things.
The other argument is that there should be due process before, you know, however many shows there are on an entertainment channel saying, you know, that this guy is an abuser or whatever, there should be due process.
There's a lot of evidence. But I don't know whether there's been a court case. There's a criminal investigation going on.
Well, you should allow these investigations. I mean, clearly in the case of R. Kelly and Drake and all these other guys, you think to yourself, when you're only going to listen to the songs, to know that...
But it's a different thing for having a song versus having, like, victims.
Yes, I agree with you. But it's not, you know, it's very much a, you know, dog bites man story. It's not a man bites dog story.
What? Yeah,
years ago, if a story was considered to be no big surprise, you know, in your generation, it'd be no shit Sherlock. You know, R. Kelly is a bit of a sex pest. Yeah. Bump and grind. You're not exactly surprised, as people have said about Woody Allen. Wow, what a surprise Woody Allen seems to have a taste for younger women.
Yeah, true.
When he made the film Manhattan.
Well, that's what they say about Drake. No surprise he's got a taste for teenage girls when he's written a song called Teenage Fever.
No, there isn't. So what do we do? There's no surprise. It shouldn't happen.
But also it should get... I think there is a race issue in it.
Hmm.
I think there really is.
Yes, I think there is. Because I think a lot of black artists do make these songs.
That's
a lot
not
of
what
rappers.
I meant.
No, I know it's what you meant. It's not what you meant. But that would be the reason. It's more of an interesting story. If there's a story about Cliff Richard being an abuser, which he's not, of course, but there was an investigation. You know, there was a rumour and there was these outrageous accusations.
No, I know. It's a bigger story.
That's a bigger story.
Ed Sheeran,
you know, precisely. Yeah. If Ed Sheeran or the Archbishop of Canterbury is accused of sexual abuse, it's a bigger story
mean,
than if some
still...
rapper who's made a song called Bump and Grind or whatever.
Yeah, no, I get that. that's the way journalism works and stuff. But with the R. Kelly thing, I think that a lot of people are saying that, like, no one's dragging him down because people expected it, but that's still not right.
It's still not right. But I don't see a solution to that given the way the media works. We'll take a short break and then have a little bit of music.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Should we start with mine this week?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be something you're familiar with. It's Blue Bayou and Roy Orbison.
Aww.
I'm going back someday, come what may, to Blue Bayou, where you sleep all day and the catfish play on Blue Bayou.
Yes, I know you'll know the song.
Yeah.
And you'll know... Do you know anything about Roy Orbison?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, I know that he did Crying as well.
He did Crying, which became a sort of bit of a sleeper hit. It was not a hit at the time. He went through a lot of tragic times, actually, Roy Orbison. The reason I played it was we were talking about your older sister, or your oldest sister, who celebrated her birthday this week. And you know I love that song, Blue Bayou, by Roy Orbison. When, a few years ago... When I had an operation, I was in hospital for a bit. I came out, and because when you've been in hospital and had an operation, you're not allowed to drive. And on the first journey, I was driving. I thought, brilliant. I can, one of my great pleasures, driving the car and putting in a CD that I like. And I put in Blue Bayou, and I said, I just love this song so much. And your oldest sister, oh, do you want it at your funeral? So I thought it was rather sweet that I'd just been in hospital operation and my funeral was being planned. But Roy Orbison had a really unbelievable load of tracks, not just his career, because in America, he was after, probably after the 60s, after about 64, 65, he couldn't get arrested, had very few hits, came over to the UK, was hugely, much more popular in the UK than he ever was in America. He married this woman called Claudette, and they were big motorbike fans. They got divorced because of her infidelities. They got back together again, and then she got killed in a motorbike accident while he was while he was out touring. During a tour of England in 68, he received the news that his home in Tennessee had burned down and his two eldest sons had died in this fire. And he died of a heart attack himself at the age of 52.
That's young.
It is young. And he died just after he joined the Travelling Wilburys. Which, have you heard of the Travelling Wilburys?
No.
I'll play them on another week. So, what have you chosen?
Mine's a song called Star Child by Eluge. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but I'm gone.
Well, it is interesting, because when I saw it, Eluge, spelled E-L-U-J-A-Y, I thought, I wonder if that's sort of like a pun on the American president, LBJ. I wonder if it should be pronounced L-U-J rather than L-U-J.
Sure.
Who knows? But let's listen.
She's on my mind. She's on my mind. Won't you come down? Oh, star child. Yeah. Drifting out of space. Check your time of day. Yeah. I need to know.
the stars align.
So what can you tell me about L.U.J. or L.U.J.?
He's a singer-songwriter from Oakland, California. He's 22 years old. And he had a really rich musical upbringing, it says, where the sounds of D'Angelo and like Earth, Wind and Fire could be heard floating through the household on any given day. But his music is like quite soulful.
Yes. When I listened to that, do you know what I thought straight away? I didn't think Earth, Wind and Fire. I thought there's a man who's heard quite a few Stevie Wonder albums.
Yeah, probably.
It's so much like something off Songs in the Key of Life or one of those famous Stevie Wonder
albums.
But
I like it because it takes that kind of Stephen, like really classic, like soul, but it's kind of he switches between rap and singing really effortlessly.
I didn't know it's any rap in it. I listened to
maybe not, I don't remember in this song, but
no,
he
I don't think there is because I listened
in
through
other
to
songs.
The, I listened through to the song and I thought,
but it, also his singing is not like it's not the same style singing as Stevie Wonder would do. It's a similar feel and similar tone to the music, but it's not the same style singing. You know what I mean?
I think it is.
Really?
Yeah, to me, that did sound like a Stevie Wonder album track, a sort of lesser-known Stevie Wonder album track. But, yeah, interesting. I was pleased that it wasn't rap.
Oh,
yes,
well, there you go.
That's always pleases me. Let's have a look at the emails, Ruth. Not loads of them this week. Steve talked about Brexit, which I thought was quite interesting because we both watched the Brexit drama written by James Graham.
The Uncivil War.
The Uncivil War.
It's really good.
It's brilliant. But we were saying last week that what's emerged from the debates since the Brexit vote is the fact that we didn't really know much about it, that it was much more complicated.
I still don't really truly understand what the EU does.
No, much more complicated than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Steve has written to us. Steve is more my sort of generation than your generation. He says it's only...
with a name like Steve.
Yeah. It's only complicated because the way the EU is involved, but there's nothing that can't be worked out. The world won't end and people will still be educated and with visas, if need be, will be able to travel or work, but in a more controlled system. I'd be happy with no deal because I think the EU have tried to bully us again, partly because too many of our MPs have not bowed to the will of the people. And he goes into a lot of detail about it, but he's obviously in favour of leaving under any terms, whether it's a no deal or a deal.
I mean, if we have no deal at all, how does trade and like borders work and stuff?
There's no point in asking me. I know that the majority of people that I respect in terms of journalists and economists and such like say that it'd be a disaster if we go out without a deal. So I'm just...
People who are truly trained and have like, you know, who know like economics, because not many people do, the general public certainly do, they say it'll be a disaster to leave, and I'm inclined to listen to experts on stuff that I don't understand.
Yes, me too. That's why the referendum was such a bad idea, in my view. And watching that James Graham drama on Channel 4 last night didn't lead me to change that view in any way whatsoever. The referendum
been a referendum at all.
It was a really bad idea, and eventually it sort of hinged on who were the cleverer in handling the...
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that the Leave campaign wasn't extremely clever.
Yeah, but, I mean, but that, yeah. So that's what it hinged on, the fact that they had these people like Cambridge Analytica and the other people whose name...
Something HQ.
Yeah, something like that, who were able to work out via algorithms and such like where to place their message and how effectively to place their message.
On the side of buses.
Well, the side of buses help, but I mean also the internet.
Yeah,
and the take back control. Not take control, take back control. As if it had been stolen from us by the EU.
Yeah.
Take back control. Very, very clever. And if we get a second referendum, the slogan, I'm told, is going to be, tell them again.
Are you allowed to say that?
Yes, I am allowed to say that. I think it's only speculation. But if the slogan is, tell them again, it will buy into the same thing, which... At the end of the day, as was proven brilliantly by that drama, it's nothing to do with Europe at all.
No,
it's to do with the way the country's changing.
It's to do with political unrest. It was either you or maybe a newspaper said it at the time. They were like, people voted leave because they wanted to break a few windows, but they accidentally tore the house down.
It wasn't me who said that. That would be a newspaper, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
What I said was people voted leave because for once they had a chance to vote no. You know, normally you have to vote... Labour or Conservative. You have to vote positively for something, but this was a chance to say no.
Well, that's the thing, the throwing rocks at the windows.
Throwing rocks at the windows, yeah.
Maybe I came up with that. I should have just said it and not said it was from a newspaper. Speaking about political unrest and disenchantment and stuff, there was an article by Anne Helen Peterson. She was saying that for millennials, there is no existence outside work, and the line between work and life is so blurred that the idea of work-life balance is not is it's never even been an aspiration, because the idea that you just have to work all the time, and I think it's part of the whole like gig economy, because you just have to work all the time. There's nothing you can do about it. And also with like Instagram, your Instagram has to show you as fun and cultured to maintain interest, but not drunk enough to appear like that's all you do. And your Twitter should show your connection to current affairs, but not alienate people. And then your emails follow you home, and so you've got to be on your phone 24/7, and you've got to be constantly working because there's no time to ever switch off. And so this has led to like this millennial burnout, as she's like coined it. And then she talks a bit about the term adulting.
Yes, adulting. Yeah. We talked about that. We've done it. We've done adulting.
So we've done adulting.
Yeah, adulting is when you have to get a mortgage or
insure your car. And so it's become a common thing. And she said,
I hate adulting. I still hate adulting. This time of the year, for people who are freelancers like me, you have to do your tax returns. And I had to go through my stuff yesterday, and I had to print out my bank statements and all that. And I hate doing that. That's why people pay ridiculous amounts of money to account. I say people, me, pay ridiculous amounts of money to accountants just so they don't have to adult.
But anyway, she said that personally she finds the term adulting loathsome, because it conjures up deliberate infantilization, and it makes millennials as this not real subcategory of adults, which is not true. And she says that the reason for this, like, burnout is more than... it's the thing that we've kind of spoken about a lot is that just people are generally unhappier in the world at the moment. This burnout is caused by less by individual malaise, and it's more a symptom of a massive crisis of, like, capitalism. If people feel uncertain, they feel like they have to work all the time, which means they have no work-life balance, which leads to this burnout. But I think there's a
very true what you say.
Millennial issue of being constantly switched on, which I think is the same as in my generation of a social burnout. So I think millennials face like a professional burnout because you constantly have to be checking your emails, and millennials have more jobs in a lifetime. Do you know what I mean? You don't go into a career and then this is you do for the rest of your life. You have to constantly be moving from one thing to another and thinking about what's the next skill you've got to learn and stuff. But I think that Generation Z, so younger, so 19 and 17 to 19 years old, face like a social burnout of having to be constantly on your phone and stuff, and a pressure of sharing things on Instagram.
You don't have to be constantly on your phone.
You don't, but it becomes a habit.
I know.
It becomes a habit. Not
you
so
were on
much
your
of,
phone during that gripping
only
Brexit
for like two
drama.
Seconds.
Well, you don't be on your phone for 2 seconds. I didn't look at my phone once. You do not.
Yeah, but it's because of it's habitual. It's difficult. It's like an addiction. But it is an addiction. The same when you
when you're not doing anything much, you're on your phone. But when you're watching a gripping drama, but you want to be a playwright, and he's the best playwright around at the moment, and there's a chance for you to learn from the best, and you are on your phone. It's a disease.
Yeah, I'm diseased.
You're diseased. You certainly are. Meme of the week.
This is funny, but I don't know whether it's just funny because I really like a pun, or whether it's actually funny.
Well, let's find
out. So, I hate honest college boys. That would be like prep school boys, I guess. Honest college boys would be like the smart boys at universities.
Okay.
So, like Durham uni boys or something. Yeah. I hate honest college boys. I just asked this guy, "Hey, why aren't koalas considered bears?" And he hits me with, "They're marsupials." Shut up, nerd. The answer to the joke is they don't have the qualifications.
Qualifications.
That's good.
That is good. The qualifications. That's okay. Got away with it this week.
We done?
I think we're done. Thank you very much indeed for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more stuff. We've not plugged any of the...
I'll do it now.
We'll plug some of that. I'll tell you. First of all, we'll say, because we've not been plugging subscribe and like and, you know, retweet and all the stuff that everybody says.
People do it if they do it, and people won't do it if they're not going to
well,
do
I
it.
Know,
I don't think it's saying something makes people do it.
No, it doesn't. But I'm not saying.
It's there.
I'm asking.
If you want it.
I'm pleading. How about that? Do you think pleading helps?
No, people do that if they want to do it, but if they don't want to, you shouldn't.
All right, like it, subscribe it, blah, blah, blah. Now, go on.
The email, if you want to email in, is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's three times you've heard it. Good things come in threes. And this, you can hear the songs from this week and all the other weeks on the Spotify.
Have you put in last week's?
Yeah.
You haven't. Oh, you have
actually.
Here. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
There's
still one or two missing, but still. It's not going to give me a look. They can't hear.
You can search for Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and that'll take you to the playlist or the profile.
And we'll meet you again next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.